nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Welcome to a nationwide program on Radio Miraya with me, Gabriel Shadar. And today I'm having our first discussion, our discussion time in the first hour. We'll be focusing on the peace process and peace progress. And that is with a senior member of JMEC, that is the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which has been revitalized. We call it now RJMEC. And with me in the studio is Dr. Thompson Fontaine, Deputy Chief of Staff Strategy. Welcome once again, Dr. Thompson, on Radio Miraya Nationwide.
Indeed, Gabriel. Good afternoon to you and to your many listeners. My pleasure indeed.
The last time we spoke here was before the second or third extension of the pre-transitional period, and we had a lot of expectations. And now we are almost left with less than 3 weeks of the end of that extension, 100-day extension. We would like to see what has been taking place for JMEC from the perspective of JMEC. And it seems there are a number of issues that are still pending. We call them pending or hanging or being debated. And it seems also there are some issues that are posing practical difficulties, practical challenges, rather than being a matter of debate. So what would you like to tell the listeners?
Well, Gabriel, again, thank you very much. And as you rightly said, I was last there, actually, when we were talking about the extension. Yeah. And we have the 100-day extension, and we about, if you count correctly, it should be about 17 days after today, when the government should be formed. Now, I need to remind our listeners that the reasons for the extension, for both extensions, we extended first in May to November, and then November now to February. And the reasons were simple. The parties felt that they needed more time to agree on two critical issues. One, the issue of the states, the number and the boundaries of states. That is important because it was decided during the course of the negotiations of the agreement that the national government will be formed at the same time as the Council of States. So your national legislature will comprise both of the TNLA, which is on a national level, but also on a sub-national level that had to be formed. And to make sure that happened, the state's issue had to be resolved. And the second one had to do with having necessary unified forces in place, which would guarantee the security of the state. And both of those issues, it was felt, needed sufficient time to be executed. And so that's basically where we are. And I can tell you that with a few days left to the end of the 100 days, both of these issues continue to feature very, very prominently in the discussions.
Let's just start with some of the technical issues, which is the formation of the necessary unified forces. And although there seems to be progress registered over these days, it seems there are still issues with funding, and then that leads also to delayed screening and training of the necessary unified forces. And also, it seems there are some of the issues in the training centers themselves. You find that there are some of the soldiers or assumed soldiers are not really the ones that were supposed to be there. And the screening has been repeated again and again. What's happening?
All right. It's important for listeners, and that's an excellent question to start with. It's important for your listeners to understand that the process, as it was seen when the extensions were agreed, the process was to have first what we call a cantonment process and then a training process. And so you have cantonment centers and training centers, separate and distinct. The cantonment process would involve, firstly, the troops coming to those centers. They're going through a process of screening and selection. And once they're selected, they would then be sent on to the training centers. The training centers would then be divided up into the various areas. We have the organized forces to include the police forces, prison, and prison services, wildlife and fire brigade, and national security, and then the military. So they would be sent to those various training centers. However, because the process got delayed, and in an effort to try to speed things up, a decision was taken to, before the screening took place in the cantonment centers, to have everybody move to the training centers. And that's just some of the confusion that came in, because everybody was moved to the training centers. But bear in mind, now at the training centers, you have people who probably, A, do not qualify to be there, and secondly, who may not want to be there, who wanted to be part of this process. So what this has effectively done is that's kind of slowed down the process, because now you have to do the screening at the training centers. And that screening only started last week. Or rather, sorry, this week, we started to see the medical teams go into the centers to do basically a medical screening at the centers already. For our own party here at JMEC, we've been to several of those centers. Personally, I've been to a few of them. We've observed, as you said, number of challenges that you see at those training centers, one of which, of course, is that the screening had not yet taken place. And because that screening had not taken place, it was very difficult to start the actual training of individuals. So what we're seeing happening this week is screening of those forces. The good news, though, is that we are seeing that people are really anxious to get to those training centers. The morale on the training centers is very high. Individuals that we've spoken to, both within the organized forces and the military, they're excited. They really want to get this training going. And so we are seeing some progress there, but it has not been as quick as we would have liked in terms of the fact that the process has kind of changed a bit, has made it a bit more difficult. So what we will see going forward is the screening taking place. Those who are finally selected will then go on to do the training according to a curriculum that has been set up by the Joint Transitional Security Committee. They will then do that training, which should last for about 6 weeks, and then we can start seeing the turning out of the necessary unified forces.
Before I go back to the 6 weeks, 6 week period for the training, the existence of these troops in some training centers is itself a positive move, we can say that. And from government and from IO and from SOA and others, it's really has been seen as a huge step in the process. Yet, there are reports that these people, these soldiers, these fighters, are not having enough food. And they are not even having shelters in those areas, and some services are lacking, and their life is not as it was supposed to be. It's not even as it was to be. Like, people have spent a lot of money, and why is the situation like that? So, what kind of reports is JMEC receiving about this?
Yes, besides receiving reports, as I said, we've been there on the ground. In fact, even today, our security advisor went to Maridi. Last week, personally, I was in Mapel and Masabina in Wau, in the Babar Ghazal area. Mm. And what we are seeing is, as you described it, you have a situation where the troops do not have shelter. There is no mobility, there is not enough medicine. A lot of those issues and challenges that has to be confronted. I must say now the focus is on getting those issues resolved. A number of countries have stepped in. For example, the Japanese and the Chinese government has provided some of what is required. So the Chinese have provided lots and lots of medicines and other in-kind support. The Japanese have provided sleeping mats and tents and so on. The question now is to get this out. They have arrived here in Juba, and the focus this week is to get them out of Juba into the training centers. And we believe once this is done, it will make the lives of the trainees a lot more comfortable. Mm-hmm. In addition, a lot of the food that you spoke about is now being distributed. So we've seen this week a great improvement in that situation, and we're hoping that all of those areas will be impacted. In addition, the UNMISS has been approached to assist in that process as well. CITISAM is helping. So all of the assets that we can find on the ground have now been utilized to ensure that the situation of the trainees are improved, because you want people to be satisfied. We also had the issue of uniforms. Mm-hmm. Individuals are showing up for training and they have different uniforms, some without uniforms. Yeah. That too has to be addressed. And in that regard, we are thankful for the support of the Chinese government. We've gotten some support as well from the Egyptians that are willing to provide that kind of support. So the hope is that in the coming days and weeks, we'll see a great improvement in this. We are very much aware of the problem. JMEC, what we do, once we get these reports, once it is verified by our advisors and by CITISAM, we can then approach the Joint Defense Board and the NPTC to basically inform them of what needs to be done. And we're thankful that they're responding, and we'll certainly see some improvement going forward.
Yeah. From more than 80,000 target down to 44,000 of necessary unified forces. Now people are in the training centers. Do you expect that the 44,000 is going to be met, or what is the most optimistic or pessimistic number that can be achieved?
Okay, let me explain the number issue. What the target is 83,000 necessary unified forces. Mm-hmm. We had in the cantonment sites, we had registrations of close to 80,000 individuals. Currently, as we speak, we have about 40,000 persons who have been moved to the training centers. But this is not all. The target is still to reach the 83,000. Mm-hmm. But that will be done in phases. Yeah. So you have basically a first phase of about 40,000 that are there now. And I must say almost in equal numbers of government and opposition forces, which is a really good signal. So once this training starts, you will continue to roll people in. So the remainders of the individuals who are at the cantonment sites will be brought in. Those who are at assembly sites who had not gone into the cantonment sites will then go through the process. So we envisage a kind of a rolling process that will bring us up to the number of 83,000. Yeah. But there has been no decision to reduce the number. Yeah. It's just that because of that, it was slowed down, then they're doing a kind of a phased process going forward.
Now, we have 17 days as deadline for the formation of the transitional government, and you have 6 weeks that are supposed to be for the training of the unified forces, and then you'll have a process of deploying them. So how do you reconcile these two?
All right. I think now there is a realization on the part of the parties that it is not possible to have the 83,000 trained by the 22nd. Everybody agrees to that now. It's just not physically practical, to happen. So because of that, the discussion must now revolve around how do we go about that? How do we address this particular issue? So what you will find is that the discussions that will be taking place, in particular surrounding the AU summit that is taking place this weekend in Addis, will involve those types of discussions. What will the parties accept as a suitable, measure of progress? What will they accept as enough to form the government? So those discussions will take place, and they are taking place this weekend, because on the sidelines of the AU summit, there will be an extraordinary meeting of the IGAD Council of Ministers, as well as a summit of the heads of state and government. So those issues will be tackled there. That, along with the issue of the number of states, if it is not resolved before then.
Yes, and Dr. Fontaine, we have to mention that some of the delays were attributed or caused by delayed in funding, because in one of the reports I've seen is that the funding for the extended period of 100 day was brought after 37 days.
Yes, without a doubt, we've had our issues with this. And as you rightly said, the first funding, the initial $40 million promised by the government, reached the mechanisms on the 16th of December, which was already well into the 100-day period. Mm. So at that point, that's when they began to scramble and try to see how best they could. But it was clear that they were already behind time, because when the 100 days were decided upon, it was based on the condition that the resources would be availed up front.
Immediately.
Yes, yeah. immediately. That did not happen. And as such, it threw everything off schedule.
And now, if we continue talking about reunification of forces, people can get away with an idea that it is the only thing that is needed in terms of the security arrangements.
No, it's not. It is a critical step nonetheless. One of the things, one of the problems that... Okay, let me say it this way. One of the, during the negotiations, one of the critical points that was in everybody's mind, because of the experience of 2016 and what happened, where effectively you had two separate armies within Juba reporting to separate commanders-in-chief. The agreement was struck to show that this would not happen again, that when you have a government formed, it will be a situation where you have all the troops reporting to one commander-in-chief. Mm. So that is the basis, that is the extent to which this whole idea of a unified force was brought in, because the idea was, if you have a unified force reporting to one commander-in-chief, it is less likely to resort to the kind of violence we saw in 2016. So that therefore becomes very important that this be done, and it is a critical part. But as you said, that is not all. Beyond this, and it is just a first step. The 83,000 is a first step which will guarantee, if you like, the initial security of Juba and the surrounding areas. But beyond that, you have a defense policy that has been built. What will the new military look like for South Sudan? Another critical part is the DDR commission. How the individuals who were former combatants, how do you take care of them? How do you ensure that if they wish not to continue in their forces, how do you then cater for them? And therefore, the role of the DDR Commission is critical. The DDR Commission has been formed. They are functional. They have deployed their teams across South Sudan. But they still need a tremendous amount of funding to provide resources to those combatants who do not go on to be part of the unified forces. And that is as critical as forming the unified forces.
And it has been always challenging, this DDR thing. It has been always challenging over the years we've been following. And things did not really succeed. And the issue of funding also, I think, the partners and the parties of the agreement believe it's also in the hands of the government, or there is more leniency on the part of the donors to support DDR rather than the other component of the security.
Yes, and I'm glad you asked this question, because the donors have been very deliberate in stating that the funding for cantonment and training should be the purview of the government. They've been very clear about that. When it comes to DDR and helping those who do not make it to the military or make it to the police forces and so on, then they are more willing to assist. And the DDR Commission, part of their remit is to get as much assistance as possible from the donors. And already we are seeing a willingness of donors to step in and help. Mm-hmm. And that can only grow as the process itself gets underway.
Listeners, Radio Miraya, this is me, Gabriel Shadar, with Nationwide Discussion Hour. And with me in the studio is the Deputy Chief of Staff Strategy of the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission on the Peace Process in South Sudan. That is Dr. Thomas Fontaine. And we have just covered one part of our discussion, which is about the security arrangements and also the training, the cantonment and training of forces. And we have just concluded with remarks on the DDR process. Let's see now the other part of the process, which is the political one, if I can say, which is we have an issue here, the issue of let's have a quick update on this concern that was brought up by civil society organizations, and mainly it was what they think is a delayed process in the amendment and approval of the bills that are necessary to be passed and amended and passed before the beginning of the pre-transitional period.
Yes, the NCSC, National Constitutional Amendment Committee, revised all of the security laws. So the laws pertaining to the military, to the police, to the fire brigade, all of those laws were amended to be in conformity with the peace agreement. Once that was done, these bills were supposed to then be ratified by the National Assembly. This has not yet been done. Also, the incorporation of the agreement into the Constitution also remains to be ratified by the Assembly. Now, we are being told that it will only take a day for that to happen. Yeah. So conceivably, it could happen the day before the government is formed or a couple days before. It is not a difficult process because all the work has been done. Mm. It's simply a matter of the Assembly sitting and ratifying those so that they become part of the laws of South Sudan.
Yeah, let me go now to the issue. I've discussed this a lot here and day and after, this issue of the number of states and their boundaries. It seemed to have taken the whole of the debate now, and everything has been pushed under the rug, maybe. But this number of this issue on the number of states, I want you to focus on the role of JMEC in this, because we have already heard a lot about the position of the parties one again and again. But what would be and what could be the role of JMEC? Because I feel that there is a mixture that JMEC should be doing more than what is being doing now. How much can JMEC really push the parties to decide, or how much JMEC can even suggest something for the parties?
Okay. In fact, I just came back from the Pyramid Hotel. I left the Pyramid Hotel to come to this interview and plan to go back there because the parties are meeting right now as we speak on this particular issue with the involvement of our JMEC. Now, this is an issue that we believe should be solved by the parties and can be solved by the parties. The role that JMEC has been playing is to help the IGAD mediation, to kind of work together with the IGAD mediation, because they're the ones that are charged with to being in control of that particular issue, because it is seen as part of the agreement itself, an unresolved part of the agreement. And so is the IGAD Special Envoy's Office that has the lead on this. As the monitoring body, we've been able to observe, consult with the parties. In fact, we have monthly consultations with the parties to the agreement separately and sometimes together, where we discuss those issues. And we try our best to point out what we think should be done or how it can move. But in terms of a determination of the actual number, that is something that the parties themselves have to agree upon. Mm-hmm. And we hope that those discussions taking place now will in fact be a fruit. The Deputy President, Vice President of South Africa, Joseph Mabuza, is in charge of those discussions, and that is taking place now. So we are hoping that the parties will reach closer to some kind of agreement. As you said, you know the position of all of the parties. It's a very difficult thing to resolve, only because you have it is not purely technical. It deals with culture, with emotion, with history, all of this mixed up. And when you get those kind of difficult issues, it becomes really hard to resolve it sometimes. But we are confident. I think the parties understand this. And it's something that Jimmy keeps stressing every time we meet the parties. We keep stressing the need to have a resolution. We remind the parties that if you're going to, as you have agreed, if you're going to form the government, this issue needs to be resolved. So whatever you have to do, whatever compromises you need to make, you ought to do it to ensure that this issue is resolved in the best interest of the people of South Sudan.
Yes, as you said, it's not just a matter of numbers. It's a matter of a lot of issues that are involved and a lot of history that is behind that. And also, it's about the future. But it's clear that this thing is for the 3 years of the interim period. It's not going to be a permanent thing.
Well, part of the discussion is whether whatever decision is arrived at is temporary or permanent. So that will form part of the agreement. So when they agree on some number, it will be with the caveat that it will be temporary or permanent. Most likely it will be temporary because you have the permanent constitution-making process that is supposed to start 4 months after the formation of the government, and this issue will be taken up there again. So there'll be a chance for the people of South Sudan to weigh in on this issue. So really what we're looking at is most likely a temporary solution which will allow for the formation of the government. Once the government is formed, then that particular issue can then be dealt with under that particular constitution making process.
Last question before I go to the listeners is the room and Santa Gideon led mediation, and I think JEMEC is monitoring and evaluating that also.
Yes, absolutely. Recall that this whole thing started with the non-signatories, and we say non-signatories in plural, but it's really a non-signatory. It was Thomas Riller's group.
Yeah.
Non-signatory in the sense that he was part of the negotiations. He signed the COA on December 21st, 2017, but he did not sign the agreement, and he was considered to be a holdout. And part of that discussion has been with him. But in addition to that, we have that of General Paul Malong, the former Chief of Defense Forces here in South Sudan. He has also been involved, as well as Pam Amam, who is also part of those discussions.
Mm.
The good thing is, and why it concerned us, is because a lot of the disturbances that we had seen in terms of the ceasefire not holding, although it was not attributed to the ceasefire because Thomas Cirillo was not a signatory, so he could not be accused of violating the ceasefire when he's not a signatory to the agreement, but he was accused of violating the COA of 2017. A lot of that was in the Ye River area, and that was causing deaths and conflict in that particular area. So we were very happy when on the 15th of this of last month, January, an agreement was reached between the government and those forces to have basically to stop all the conflict,
mm-hmm.
to stop. And
yeah.
We are very happy about that. So that's one. The other issue of concern around that area is the situation in Maiwood. You must be aware that we had a situation where we had a general, an IO general, General James Ochan, who defected from the IO,
yeah.
and started fighting against the IO forces there in Maiwood. That led to about 8,000 persons being displaced. It led to several deaths and so on. This particular issue is being dealt with. Even as we speak, yesterday, both James Ochan and James Kor, who is the opposition general, they were brought here to Juba, and they're meeting under the auspices of the NPTC. They're discussing how to bring an end to this particular conflict. They've had 2 days of discussion, and it continues tomorrow. So that issue, hopefully, will also be resolved. And if these are resolved, then all of these other things, you know, outside of the agreement can be, you know, can be taken care of.
Is Maiwood the only area that we are facing challenges with ceasefire?
Yes, Maiwood, that was the only, if you like, the real test of the ceasefire.
Mm.
The good thing is, and that is something I keep repeating every time I get the opportunity to, is that since the signing of the peace agreement on September 12, 2018, the permanent ceasefire has held throughout the country.
Mm.
We've had the issues of cattle rustling and deaths linked to that, but this is not directly related to the peace agreement. The parties to the agreement, they've been true to their oath to refrain from engaging in fighting or engaging in war. And that, I think, offers the best hope for a successful conclusion to this, the fact that the parties are not willing to go back to fighting.
And that is this is the update from Dr. Thompson Fontaine, Deputy Chief of Staff Strategy from the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission on the Peace Process in South Sudan. And this is a nationwide program on Radio Brio. It's me, Gabriel Shadar. And I will be going now to the listeners and pick their comments and also their questions on what we have been discussing here. And also you can be sending your SMS on 0929693205, and also you can call on the regular numbers 0912062950 and also 0912062079, and on also you can use you can call our MTN numbers 0921902 2950 and also 0921902079, and the same of course for the SMS.
Nationwide, your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.
I see some SMS here, and one is from Mading Malwala Luang from Central Apennine State in Malakal. It says the question is the training of unified forces has not yet been started and numbers of state are not being determined and other spending issues. Do you think the government will be formed on the 23rd of February without any more extension? That is a question. And yes, he sent his message, I think. Okay, he's another Mading Along from Malacca. He says he's giving also a comment. He says that the government intervene and make a follow-up to provide good security to traders without threats. He's also focusing on issues of insecurity that are not related to the peace agreement, of course. And teacher Bang, Mark Bang Mayeb from WOW, he says, why have the two warring parties have so controversies over years, while international community seems to be the agents that push them to agree on things that would alleviate our country out of war? Why are signatories to the agreement do not take decisions that would logically help us out of this long-term problem? And from Ladjor, this is Ladjor Dio Guy from Bentio POC. He's saying, thanks for giving peace update on peace process. My question is, what do you think will happen to leaders who confuse or refuse to bring peace and unity to our people? And let me also pick some of the callers here who are calling. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome.
Hello?
Yes, I'm getting you. Can you put off your radio? Yes.
Hello, can you get me now?
Yes, I'm getting you. Who's calling?
Yeah, this is Thomas from Manakal.
Welcome, Thomas.
Yeah, I appreciate the program, and I appreciate the explanation from your guest in the studio. Mm-hmm. I understand his explanation on the issue of the security arrangements and also the states and so on. Mm-hmm. My concern here is I want to understand this new process with the holdout groups, specifically Thomas Cirillo and the former chief of general staff here. Mm-hmm. in Rome. Is it going to lead to something like ultimately these two guys to join the current process, the current Vatalaga agreement, or is it maybe going to lead to a new agreement? Because we need to remember that Thomas Cirillo's argument all this time was that the current agreement did not actually address the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan. Mm. So how does your guest foresee the process ending?
Yeah, okay.
Is it going to lead to Thomas Cirillo joining the current process,
yeah,
or a new, different agreement that may come up? And how does he see the success of that process?
Yes, thank you, Thomas from Malakal. I have also Del Awangdit from Chimbel County. He says, why is it very difficult for JEMEC, including IGAD, AU plus UN, to come out with resolutions on the number of states if they fail to resolve the outstanding issues? Let me get a caller here. Hello? Hello?
Hello, Gabriel Jadar.
Yes, welcome. Who's calling?
Good evening, my brother.
Yeah, good evening. Who's calling?
This is Mark Tong. I'm calling from Turale.
Welcome, Mark. Welcome, Mark.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much. You know, Gabriel Jadar, my question is going direct to the Thomas in the studio. Mm. My question is goes like this. Hello?
Yeah, I'm getting you. I'm getting you. Hello? Okay, the line has gone off. I think it's a problem of network. Let's get quick answers to some of the these two questions. The holdout and what is likely to be the scenario and also the last question from the SMS. Yes.
on the question of the training, as the first one that you read out indicated that the training has not started and the issue of the states has not been resolved. And what do we think about an extension? Now, as I said at the start of the program, a decision on whether to extend or whether to move ahead will be made by the parties. Yeah. And that is a decision that will most likely come out of those meetings that are taking place this weekend. So we need to be a bit patient. Discussions, obviously, around how you can deal with some of those issues. Okay, so I am confident that by the time this weekend is over and by the time the meetings are over, the parties would have come up with some common positions that would allow them to move forward. Mm-hmm. The question is, that was asked as to what will happen to leaders who refuse to bring peace. The Chapter 5 of the agreement allows for transitional justice arrangements, which basically means that you'll have the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the hybrid court, and all of this. All of these are supposed to come into play once the government is formed, so that we can look back and see what kind of measures will be placed. But that is a chapter that is very important and is part of the agreement, something to which all the parties have signed up on. And so we will expect those things to move forward as the government is formed. Michael, I think from Malachi, was asking about the holder groups in Rome and what I think will happen. The important thing to note is that the agreement will not be reopened. Okay, people need to understand that. That the discussions with Thomas Cirillo, Paul Malong, etc., is to see how they can join the process, because you want this process to be as inclusive as possible. In fact, the very premise of this new agreement was an inclusivity, not leaving anybody outside of the agreement. So discussions, obviously, about how best they can be accommodated, but that accommodation has to be within the confines of the agreement. And the question about why can JMEC or EGAN make decisions, this ultimately is an issue for the South Sudanese to deal with. It is their country, and they're the ones that have to make the bold decisions. So I think it's important that the leaders make the decisions that will benefit all of South Sudan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Somebody is asking also, I think it's in the same line, is RJMEC against its IBC report? Does it respect the report? How independent is the RJMEC? So a lot of questions from somebody who is really...
Yes. No, I'm happy to answer about the IBC report. Bear in mind, the IBC report, or the IBC itself, was set up. It was set up within the agreement to try to resolve the issue of the states. Mm. It was based on the consensus coming from South Sudanese. The IBC had 15 members, 10 of which were South Sudanese. From those 10 members, 7 of the 10 South Sudanese had to decide on the number of states for it to be binding. Mm. At the end of the day, 6 out of the 10 decided, and as such, it is not and could not be binding. So in that sense, it is their decision. What the IBC did further was to ask that it be thrown back to the parties to agree, since it was a political decision, and we can only go with this with the decisions that the parties make. So in terms of the agreement, it's unfortunate that a decision was not reached by the IBC, but they were given a chance to do so.
Yeah, let me try also to get one of the callers here online. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yeah, I'm Yahya Wissala from WOW.
Marhab Yahya, marhaba.
Hi. أول أنا بشكر ضيفك في الاستوديو لتحليل بتاعه الكامل للموضوع بتاع الاتفاق والحدود بتاعه كله. يلا طبعا أنا داير أعدي وجهة نظر بس وجهة نظر بتاعتي.
نعم تفضل.
طبعا انا يا جماعه شعب تجربه السودان بقى محتاج دير السلام ووصل لقناعه انه الاطلاع والقوه والعنف ما ده يحل كل حاجات الحلول السلميه هو الممكن. طبعا الاتفاقيه هناك واضح ونازل ايوه كمان لازم هم يفهموا الكلام ده. الاتفاقيه بيقول انه في حاله الاطراف دير كله فشلوا يعني هم يتفقوا على عدد بتاع ولايات فالناس يرجعوا للاستفتاء. الاستفتاء هو اللي بيحل قضيه بتاعت 32 ولايه ولا 21 ولايه.
اوكي.
واضح في الاتفاقيه.
اوكي.
وطبعا انا كنت متابع قبل فتره يعني الناس بتاعت ايوه كانوا هم يتكلموا عنه الوسيط الاقليمي، كانوا بيقولوا انه بناتي لانه ناس يبقى على 32 ولايه، هم بيقولوا انهازوا الحكومه، لكن ده كان ما انهاز الحكومه، كان ده حاجه موجود في الاتفاقيه، لازم هم يتابعوا الحته ده.
اوكي.
وبعدين هم ناس الايوه هم بدوا كان بتقسيم الولايات ل 21 ولايه. طيب هم كان قصدهم شنو زمن ده لما هم زادوا عدد الولايات كان شنو؟ ما هو ترى كان ذات مرجعيه ترى او للسلطه، لانه اصلا لا 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 التمثيل كان ضعيف جدا، فهم كان دايرين يمثلون في السلطه. فاذا قسموا جنوب السودان ل 21 ولايه. طيب بنفس القدر الكاب فيه شنو لما الحكومه ياتي زاد ل 32 ولايه. ما كاب حاجه فيه. المهم انه الناس تقوم تفهم انه الشعب ده داير شنو. والاستفتاء انا بشوف هو الخيار، لا هو اي او يقدر يلزم على حكومه انه يتراجع ل 32، لا حكومه كمان يقدر يقول للشعب ثاني نتراجع من 32. علينا دايرين الكلام ده يتم حله عبر استفتاء، لا خيار كان امام ايو عشان ما يقعد يلعب لنا من 91 لحد 2013، لا ده انت الان الشعب بيموت ساي، والشعب لازم يواجه اي او بكلام بتاعه. وانا من هذا المنطلق يقول انه الشعب بتاع جنوب السودان لازم يشوف اي او ده بعينين.
شكرا أوشلا يحيى. أوشلا يحيى is very passionate about the number of states. He is one of the supporters of the government's position of 32 states, and he says it's IO who created this run this race by asking for 22 and all that kind of things, and the only solution according to him is going back to the peace agreement and we go for a referendum. I think the issue has been now it's just, he says, this all about power struggle. Let me take one caller for 1 minute and then I come back to you. Hello.
Yes, Damran Sidar, good evening.
Good evening, who is calling?
One line is Baba Costa from Yambio.
Baba Costa?
Baba Costa.
Welcome.
Thank you, my bro. First of all, you know, Damran Sidar. So we, the people of this country, we are really willing for peace and we need it so. But we come to understand that the issue of the state has become now a problem for the new government to be formed. And they were formed a committee to talk about this issue of number of the state. Those of David Mabusa, they did not make it successfully. So in the behalf of JMEC, if these people completely fail to agree on the number of the state, and they say that they are taking it for the international court to be talk about this issue of number of states. I don't understand. Is it the right move for the people of South Sudan to agree with this, or is it the right move for the international court to discuss about the issue of number of states?
Mm-hmm.
Or is
okay.
It the
okay.
People of South Sudan?
Okay. The caller from Yambio is mixing the speaking about arbitration as if it is going to an international court. So that is a question for you, but also it's a chance for you in the last 2 minutes to make your concluding remarks.
Okay, yeah, sure. And let me just kind of clarify that. As you rightly pointed out, the arbitration mechanism that was suggested is not for the international court. The feeling was that the parties to the agreement had reached the end of the road. They could not resolve the issue. So the idea was, why not allow an independent committee to look at that issue and then come up with a number? And then that would be binding. And that's why the term arbitration came up, in the sense that it would be binding on the parties. It simply meant that whatever number this mechanism agreed upon, the parties would have to agree. But it does not mean that it will go to the court.
Yeah.
In fact, the suggestion would be that it would be made up of the C5 members as well as the special envoys to South Sudan. And I can tell that this issue is being discussed even now. Okay, the parties have not given up on it. They're just trying to see how best it can be worked as probably part of the solution to this issue. But I think the understanding is there that, and all the parties are now well aware that a solution to this issue must be found. And I'm confident that something will happen, that they will find this before we go into the 22nd.
Yes, and your last remark on this discussion and update from Jemek.
Yes, let me just say that and just remind the people of South Sudan that it's been a long process. I mean, we are now at this thing approaching 3 years, but peace sometimes takes time. People need to be patient. The thing that really encourages me every day that I go to the office or whether I go to the States, Yambio, Torit, wherever to visit with the people is to see the hope and the expectation. But beyond that, I have seen in those training camps individuals who formerly fought each other and now calling each other brother and sister. And this is something that tells me that this peace will last, because at the very basic level, former combatants are getting together, they're sleeping together, they're sharing the food together, they're sharing whatever they have, and you have no issues of security, as far as we know, in most of those training centers. So that, I believe, offers a very good direction that we will see going forward. So people need to be patient. The political part sometimes takes a little while to work, but the parties are working on it. They're discussing now on the issue of the states. If no resolution is reached in the next day or two, those discussions will continue over the weekend. But one thing is certain, sooner or later, we will get some solution to those outstanding issues. We'll have a new government in place and the rest of the agreement will be opened up.
Dr. Thompson Fontaine, Deputy Chief of Staff Strategy for the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission on the Peace Process in South Sudan, thanks very much for being on Nationwide once again. And we hope whatever happens, we will have you again here and you will give us this kind of excellent update. And it's all from me, Gabriel Shadar, on Nationwide on Radio Mirai. Thanks for listening.
Nationwide. Your daily current affairs program on Radio Mirai.